This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross. Today is the second Mardi Gras in New Orleans since Hurricane Katrina. My guest is trumpeter and composer Irvin Mayfield. The 29-year-old musician has been the official cultural ambassador for the city of New Orleans and the state of Louisiana since 2003. Mayfield is also the founder and director of the New Orleans Jazz Orchestra, leads his own quintet, and co-leads the Latin jazz group Los Hombres Calientes. After Hurricane Katrina, he was commissioned by the Episcopal Church to compose an orchestral work that would echo the city's grief, but also commemorate the city's rebirth. Soon after his first performance of the piece, in mid-November of 2005, he learned that his father, who had been missing since the hurricane, had actually died in the flood. Irvin Mayfield, welcome to Fresh Air. Given all the problems that people in New Orleans are still having, how do you feel about celebrating during Mardi Gras?
Well, I think in the city of New Orleans, you know, if we don't celebrate, we're not going to have anything else. I think it's one of the one few things that we can do well, that we control ourselves. And when you really look at the story of New Orleans, the biggest American part of it is how we do celebrate through adversity, how we can do like our founding forefathers did and the slaves did. We take something that starts out one way and we manipulate it to represent ourselves. And so we, in that sense, we really have the true American sense of rebuilding.
So this is the second Mardi Gras in New Orleans. How much of the music scene has come back and what is still painfully missing?
I would say the thing that would be most painfully missing is the variety of the types of people for Mardi Gras. Even though I know a lot of people are coming back and they're coming in town to celebrate, a lot of the folks, so it feels somewhat the same. You know, the feeling that you just can't go to that person's house afterwards. And we're a very small community in New Orleans. And you really miss that fact that you see this guy and say, hey, man, what you doing? I want to go by your mama's house later. And, you know, that community sense has changed. And also a lot of the areas that would have their own celebrations just don't exist anymore, from the lower Ninth Ward all the way down to New Orleans East, also the areas of the Sixth Ward in New Orleans, Gentilly, a lot of places that you just drive by, there's not a lot of people back, and that's really one of the tragic things. As far as how many musicians are back, I would say a large percentage of the musicians are back, more than half, and is growing every day, because the reality is, from all the musicians, and this is really an honest answer, all of the musicians that I've talked to as being a culture ambassador for New Orleans, I have not had one tell me they don't want to come back to New Orleans.
You know, I was going to ask you about the things that you miss most that you lost in the flood, but I was thinking what you must really miss that you lost in your flood, in the flood, is your father. He died in the flood, and I know it took you 3 months to find his body. Were you ever able to find out what actually happened to him?
Yeah, he was a victim of drowning for Hurricane Katrina. And what we kind of have, the story we've kind of put together was he was in the house on Music Street in Gentilly, which is where my parents lived. He had talked to my mother the morning after the storm had passed. They spoke on the phone. He said, everything's fine. You can come on back. You know, we got a little roof damage. And, you know, must have been a half an hour later, we look at the TV and see that there's a levee breach. And then, you know, all of the phones are out, and that was the last time we spoke to him. We then assumed that he went to the attic, because we actually went back to the house and saw that they had peanut butter and a candle and things like that, and some of his clothes up there. He must have stayed in the attic for maybe about 2 or 3 days. And then, which we know he was evacuated, because we found the person who evacuated him. He was evacuated about 5 blocks away to a school called Brother Martin. And at the school, a bunch of people were there, but it wasn't a real evacuation site. Most of the evacuations that were taking place were by the New Orleanians themselves. So this was just a neighbor who lived down the street, came with a boat, took him as well as some other people to this school. And then we believe that after, you know, another day or so, not having any food or any water, some of these people just decided to walk. And he probably thought he could swim, not realizing that the water and the streets were some places 8 feet to 12 feet to, you know, 16 feet. And his body was found somewhere around the Elysian Fields area.
What kind of funeral did you want to give him? I mean, I know you've thought a lot about classic New Orleans funerals, and what did you want to do for him? Did you want music and things like that at his funeral, or?
You know, that kind of thing at a funeral, I think it's important. But when you're really dealing with, you know, loss of parent, you know, your thinking on that level just changes. You know, it's such a deep emotional experience. It's very hard to put in words. So the things that become important at that point in time, playing a song or those kinds of things aren't the most important. But the one interesting kind of development musically out of the whole thing was that the first song I ever learned how to play that he taught me how to play actually was a church song called Just a Closer Walk with Thee, which is a song that in New Orleans we play at all the funerals, all the jazz funerals. You play it in church at funerals. And I had played this song in dedication to him when I did a lot of national concerts, you know, reminding people that he was missing, because I thought a lot of people were getting the image that, oh, if you see Irvin Mayfield, Wynton Marsalis, and Aaron Neville, they're doing a concert, everybody having a good time. People may not really understand how severe and personal the tragedy of Hurricane Katrina is. So I would announce to people every time I played it that, you know, this song is in dedication to my dad who's still missing. It's the first song he taught me how to play. And I actually played it at his funeral because he actually did ask me to play that song. But I since then retired the song at the White House with President Bush as the last time I would ever perform it, just because I found that a lot of people were asking for the song and the emotional content of the song, but I thought it was more important for New Orleans to get past the funeral and start getting to the second line celebration of our jazz funeral. So I just thought it would be better to retire the song altogether.
Would you mind if I played it on the air now?
And give, no, I don't mind.
Because you did a beautiful performance of it at a hurricane relief benefit called On Higher Ground when your father was still missing. And it's a beautiful recording, so I thought it would be good to hear it. And so this is Irvin Mayfield on trumpet with Ronald Markham at the piano. My guest, Irvin Mayfield, on trumpet. And we were talking about your father. I know he prided himself on having been your first music teacher. What did he teach you about music when you were a boy?
That's a good question. Well, the interesting thing about, you know, what makes New Orleans such a great place? My dad never thought he was a musician. My dad was a 100% New Orleanian, meaning that in New Orleans, everybody either plays music, they cook, or they dance, or they just do all of them. And so he just was a guy who just happened to play the trumpet. I didn't even know he knew how to play the trumpet when I got a trumpet. And it was after I couldn't get a sound of it that he showed me how to get the notes out of it. But the most important thing I think he always taught me was the greater importance of it, the ceremonial aspects. That's what gives New Orleans jazz a different depth, you know, the fact that you learn how to pay your dues in the jazz funerals. And you know, I remember just doing he made me do my first jazz funeral, which was 4 hours long, and it was not fun. And the things he taught me was that, you know, this it's not easy all the time, but there's a reason you have to do these things. There are other things that are as important as playing the trumpet.
So when you say he made you do your first jazz funeral, that was playing at a jazz funeral, playing in a parade?
Uh-huh. Yeah, playing in a parade outside in the hot sun in August at like 98 degrees wearing a suit and a hat. It wasn't fun at all.
I mean, how do you get to playing it? Were you part of that band? Can you just tag along and play? Like, he encouraged you to do it, but what did it, how do you actually get to do it?
Well, my brother and I were playing in this band called the Elgius Brass Band, and they were a bunch of older guys, and we would just show up at rehearsal. Mm-hmm. But they were going to do a funeral for one of the prominent preachers on the West Bank in New Orleans, and my dad said he asked the guys, could we come along and play, because he wanted us to learn how to pay our dues, you know, marching in the funeral, which has a slow part in the beginning, and then the celebration piece at the end that's much faster. And, you know, I didn't know what to expect, and I just, you know, I actually might have been excited about it at first, but I can guarantee you when we got out there, there was nothing excited about it. But in terms of any musician can join a funeral procession, that's just a New Orleans thing. If you have an instrument, you know the guy who died, you want to get out there, even if you don't know the guy, I mean, you can just come in and join in. That's what makes New Orleans one of the best places to learn how to play music.
What else do you think of as being uniquely New Orleanians about your musical upbringing?
There's so many things. A couple of things immediately stick out. First of all, that any point in time you can live anywhere in town, and there's a marching band, military-style marching band, with a tuba and a clarinet, instruments that are not thought of to be sexy today, with 500 people following behind it, and some of them jumping on cars and dancing, and I mean, it's just crazy for people who've never seen it before. And, you know, you might just be, like, on a Saturday afternoon, you know, sweeping your porch or something, and all of a sudden here come these 500 people, and just like they were there, they're gone. That's one thing. Another experience is seeing the Mardi Gras Indians. Same kind of thing. Here you see all these black guys dressed up with these elaborate headdresses that they've taken a year, 364 or 365 days to make, you know, just to wear one day a year. They come out on Super Sunday, and they come out on Mardi Gras morning. And, I mean, to see how beautiful these suits are, I mean, it's crazy. I mean, the yellow and pink and, you know, white. I mean, all the blue, all these beautiful colors. It's so amazing. And then they have all these songs that they sing. And then the other experience is just to show you how New Orleans culture is so indigenous to itself. You know, the tambourine. In New Orleans, there are two different styles of tambourine playing, and you can tell where a person is from by the way they play the tambourine. The uptown people punch the tambourine with their fist, where the downtown people slap it with their hand. So, you know, and I could just keep going on and on about all these little things about New Orleans that, you know, you would wonder what makes a city able to produce this kind of a thing.
So you think that because of the band, so you were exposed to clarinets and tubas in ways that you wouldn't have been before, and you think that's helped you as a composer?
I think the great thing about New Orleans and what it did for me was it constantly made me have to think about things that were larger than me. See, it's not just saying I saw a clarinet. It was the fact that I had to learn who Sidney Bechet, who Benny Goodman, folks that had nothing to do with me and my upbringing. I had to learn about white people, black people, had to learn about Italians, had to learn about the Roomba, had to learn about Cubans. You have to learn about things that have nothing to do with you, which is why it is it's such a great American experience, because jazz is just not home to one thing. Jazz actually gives the foundation for anything to come to it. And being in New Orleans, you wind up playing with all kind of different people. You play with men who are in their 70s. You know, when I was a young boy, yeah, I'm working with 17-year-old guys. You play with women. You might play with women singers, women who plays clarinet. I mean, just in a vast array of different people. And this is the other great thing. You wind up socially interacting with different people. I mean, you might be at a guy's house that's a multi-millionaire. And here you guys are talking. He's dancing with you or, you know, you... Mardi Gras brings everybody together. New Orleans really, really is an example of what America got correct about democracy as far as the culture is concerned.
Well, why don't we hear an excerpt of one of your orchestral compositions? And this is you with the New Orleans Jazz Orchestra, and it's an extended piece that you wrote called Strange Fruit. I'm going to ask you to just say a few words about the piece as a whole.
Mm-hmm. Strange Fruit is a piece I was commissioned to do by Dillard University, and it's based on lynching in America. And the story is about, you know, a young guy in the early 1900s, and he falls in love with a white girl, and well, they fall in love with each other, and he winds up being lynched, even though the person who set him up to be lynched says that the young guy didn't do anything wrong, it was a mistake. And because so many people were already coming to the lynching, that the sheriff and the rest of the mob said, hey, well, too many people are coming, so we got to kill this guy anyway. But the story kind of also gets past that and shows how, you know, these things happen, but there's a certain healing that takes place in the blues. And, you know, that blues is the American optimism that, hey, things are bad, but they're going to be all right. And I think that American optimism is what helps us. That sound of the blues is what has helped us get through a lot of these tragic times in America.
Let's hear a track from Strange Fruit called Ballad of the Hot Long Night. And this is composed by my guest Irvin Mayfield, who's featured on trumpet. That's an excerpt of my guest Irvin Mayfield's extended composition, Strange Fruit, and it's recorded and on CD. Now, one of the bands you play in is a kind of Cuban-Latin band called Los Hombres Calientes. How did you start gravitating to Latin music?
Another interesting aspect about New Orleans. You know, in New Orleans, we feel that we're a Caribbean city more so than a Southern city. I mean, if you really look at a lot of stuff that we do, we really are. I mean, even from our cuisine to the beans and rice, you know, you can go to any island like, you know, Puerto Rico to Trinidad to Haiti to Cuba, and they have their beans and rice. We have our own dance. Like in Cuba, they have the rumba. In New Orleans, we have the second line. You know, we got our own music. In Cuba, they may have the, you know, they have their salsa. In Trinidad, they have the steel pans. Well, in New Orleans, we got our second line music, you know, which obviously is the foundation for jazz. I would say New Orleans is the northern tip of the Caribbean culturally, and we've enjoyed great relationships. And I always would hear this music, and it seemed like it related to me. I don't know. When I would hear Cuban music, the way these people would sing over the notes, it always sounded like Louis Armstrong's trumpet to me, or the way the Brazilian singers would sing, you know, over their music. It always has some relationship to music that I heard growing up. And the same thing with the Jamaicans. It's just all the music always felt close to me. And I realized that all of this music you could dance to, but the music was hard to play. And that's how I came up with the idea for starting Los Hombres.
With Los Hombres, you've recorded a lot of Mardi Gras or Mardi Gras-inspired music. And I'd like to end by asking you to choose and to introduce for us one of your favorite of your Mardi Gras-inspired recordings.
I think my most favorite Mardi Gras-inspired recording would be the one called Mardi Gras Second Line, which is off of the Carnival CD, which is Volume 5. And the reason that this track is so amazing to me, first of all, is even though I composed the song, you know, in New Orleans, it's not like you can really take credit because everybody is creating as you go along. But on the track, I got to use my good friend Kermit Ruffins, who showed up in the studio with a Bud Light and a handkerchief and did a great narration. You know, I got to have Big Chief Donald Harrison on the track singing on it, and musicians like John Butte. We used 80 tracks for that one song. We used the Rebirth Brass Band, the Young Trombone Shorty, who was a great musician. And we just threw down. I mean, it sounded like a real New Orleans party. And I really feel like I wanted to capture the true carnival Mardi Gras experience in New Orleans. And I really feel that this track comes the closest to it.
Well, why don't we end with it? And Irvin Mayfield, I want to thank you very much for talking with us.
Thank you very much. Glad to be here.
Back again, y'all. Thought we were finished up. We back again. Irvin Mayfield, Bill Summers, Reaper, Glass Band, Trombone, Charlie, and yo, Julie, Kermit Rock. Here we go, y'all. Come on, come on. Yeah.
Irvin Mayfield is the founder and director of the New Orleans Jazz Orchestra and will tour with the band after Mardi Gras. He also leads his own quintet and co-leads the Latin jazz band Los Hombres Calientes. His album with Ellis Marsalis and the Louisiana Philharmonic will be released later this year.